Hello and welcome to the Local Economic Development Podcast.
Hosted by Sean Cunningham
and Jörg Meyer-Starmer.
For other programs in this series, please take a look at www.ledcast.net.
Hi, Sean.
Hi, Jörg.
So what are we going to talk about today?
Jörg, I've been thinking over the last couple of days, and a topic that people seem to be very uncertain about is this whole issue of competition. And why we are always hammering competition.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that maybe we should unpack this a little bit more than we did in our show on systemic competitiveness.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So what do you think? Why is it that so many people are uncomfortable with the concept of competition and competitiveness?
You know, Jörg, I think at the most basic level, it's because we sometimes don't like losing so much. So we've all worked with a colleague, or maybe we have a brother or a sister or somebody else, a friend, who's always competing and racing against us. Mm. And even when we just want to have a normal walk, they have to walk fastest.
Yeah.
Or when you want to go for coffee, they have to get there first. So maybe that is the simplest thing, is that we've all been exposed to competition since childhood years,
yeah.
And we sometimes lose.
Yeah. And and I think related to that, there's the fact that as you grow up, you often tend to get a little bit more civilized as far as competitive behavior is concerned. And you hope that this higher degree of civilization might be applicable to other spheres as well, and that everybody might just be polite and well-educated and stop bloody competing all the time.
So there's actually quite a lot of very clever people that don't like competition.
Mm-hmm.
But there are also quite a number of academics and whole parts of social science that is dedicated to competition and competition policy.
Yeah.
So from what angle do you think we should take on this topic today?
Well, I think we could maybe start with a brief consideration of what competition is like among firms, among companies, because that is something that I think not so many people are uncomfortable with, and then move on and ask, okay, so, but then to what extent is there competition between localities or competition between regions, and how can we understand that and how can we deal with that?
Okay, so let's look first at what is competition and how different people have described it over time.
Mm-hmm.
I think from the literature, especially from economics literature, most definitions of competition goes along the line that there's some kind of a rivalry between individuals or groups or companies or even in some cases nations for scarce resources or for something that not everybody can obtain.
Yes. And this type of competition is something that is actually kind of natural. As a matter of fact, when you look at the literature, when you do a bibliographical research and enter the term competitiveness, you would find that the larger part of the literature that you get, the larger part of the references that you get comes from biology and not from economics or social science. So competition and competitiveness is an issue just about everywhere.
And maybe one should already come in there by saying that sometimes people want to make an ideological argument against competition. But even in the Soviet Union, there was a lot of competition. For you to become a bureaucrat or a planner, you had to compete. So it's not as if competition is always part of the capitalist society. It is also something that is part of basically human history as far back as it's recorded. There's always been competition.
Yeah, right.
So, Jörg, why is competition important? I mean, why do economists like competition?
Well, what you observe in markets that are structured in a competitive way is that in order to thrive, in order to benefit from competition, in order to not only to survive but to establish a firm position in a competitive market, companies come up with all sorts of innovation and all sorts of improvements all the time. So competition is something that is driving productivity, that is driving efficiency, and takes companies to use resources more efficiently, or drives companies to come up with ever newer and better products or services.
I quite like it. In one of the pieces that I've read recently, it said competitive pressure makes organizations internally more efficient by sharpening incentives to avoid sloth and slack. Isn't that nice for an academic article?
nice quote, yeah, right.
Okay, so basically that is the more academic way to describe what you've just said. It puts you under pressure that you can actually not afford sloth and slack. And if you've worked in an organization where you have colleagues or peers that are doing more or less the same kind of work than you are doing, and then you know that there is no space for you to be slack in your work, because if you are not competing or performing at the level of your colleagues, then it will definitely be noticed.
Mm. Yeah.
But maybe that example also tells you that there's also not often that much incentive to be the only one that is working in an inefficient organization. So is that the only way to measure whether a sector is competitive? I mean, you described a situation where some other market system and a sector is competitive. How would we know that a sector is competitive?
That's a good question, actually, and it's also a very controversial question, because a sector, a company or a cluster, a group of companies may appear extremely competitive today and may turn out to be very uncompetitive tomorrow, because somebody else, some other company, some other cluster of companies has come up with some kind of innovation and has just overtaken the former leader in a respective market, so that a company that used to be highly competitive all of a sudden is under enormous threat. So for instance, when you look at the car industry, at the automotive industry, in the 1990s, there was a time when the Ford Motor Company was supposed to be one of the most competitive companies in the whole sector, whereas right now it's struggling for survival. So they have taken a couple of wrong turns, taken a couple of unwise decisions, and have been overtaken by other companies in their market.
So with this whole issue of there being winners and losers, or like in Ford's case now, it doesn't mean they're coming out with their hands in the air, closing down the company and just giving up.
Yeah.
What they have to do now is increase their productivity. They have to look at new business models, at new technology, new products, and they have to, in order to change their performance, they have to be competitive.
That's right.
You know, if we think of the world of football, when a club loses a season, you know, if they just lose a very important competition or a series of competition, yes, certain fans stop watching, maybe stop going to the contests. But the club doesn't necessarily just close down and now it's over. They have to look at different coaching techniques, maybe different strategies, and recruiting different people, and they have to come back by being competitive. Mm. And that is what I think economists like about competition, is that it puts pressure on you to pull up your socks and to try new things.
But I also think that the football metaphor is interesting in pointing out why many people would be uncomfortable with the pure economics perspective at competition. Because when you look at the way soccer is being played, I mean, obviously it's great to watch a soccer game where both teams are playing at the peak of their ability, where are playing a very fair game, are not playing foul all the time, are not playing nasty tricks behind the back of the referee and all that kind of stuff. But then again, you also see this kind of game very often. And when you now think about what is happening in the business world, obviously there's quite a few companies around that are playing really dirty, that are pinch kind of as what would be the equivalent of pinching your opponent behind the back of the referee. And I think this kind of dirty competition is something that that many people believe they see a lot in the business world, and see as something that they are really, really uncomfortable with. And for that reason, they generally tend to reject competition. And one of the issues, and I think an important observation, is that from a purely economics perspective, there is no particular reason why companies should not play dirty. So the resource or the incentive to compete in a reasonably clean way has to come from somewhere else. There is no inbuilt ethics mechanism in the economic world, in the business world. And there's other societal resources that we have to draw on to make competition reasonably clean and reasonably fair.
Well, and I think at the same time, to also maybe defend the perspective of economists, it's also a well-known argument that markets and competition and firms cannot actually be separated from the societies that they function in. So I think that is what you mean, is that if a firm plays dirty, just like when a sport team plays dirty, you know, it will drive away spectators, it will drive away customers, you know, in the case of firms. A lot of people would not want to be associated with working in that firm. And it's often a matter of time, just from an economics perspective, that those firms go under. But of course, it certainly helps when the other societal supporting structures, like a justice system or a law system or, you know, a recourse system, you know, helps to shape that behavior.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's look at some of the carrots and the sticks of competitiveness. I mean, what are some of the attractive things for firms to be competitive? Why would they want to be competitive?
Well, I think the main driver to be competitive and to work on their competitiveness is not just to survive in their market, but to establish themselves as a leader in their respective market. I mean, obviously, from a company perspective, the most comfortable position you can be in is to be a monopoly, not to have to compete at all. And so there is a strong incentive to try to establish yourself at least temporarily as a kind of monopoly. So think of, for instance, Apple, the computer and IT company that established itself as a quasi-monopoly in the market for portable audio players with its iPod. And that, of course, is an extremely comfortable position to be in.
Yes, but they have to keep on running because just about everybody else is trying to get into that space now.
Exactly. Yeah, that's why it's important to emphasize it's temporary, right? It's a temporary quasi-monopoly, but they have to work really hard to defend it. So they can't rest on their laurels.
Yes. Okay, that's one way. I mean, the other incentive for companies to be competitive is that they can attract better staff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And maybe also attract different kinds of customers, because some customers prefer to work with prestigious firms or with known firms or with recognized firms.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a whole set of positive feedback mechanisms that have to do with your strong competitive position in a market.
And I mean, as a firm owner, you want to be able to attract the highest possible quality or experience of staff if you're in the creative industry or something, you know, where you need highly qualified people. And you want to make it, you want to be competitive in the marketplace, not just against your competitors in terms of products. You're also competing against, let me call it, non-competitors for good staff. You know, so if you need to have a really good salesperson, they can choose between many different industries if they have good qualifications, and you want to make sure that they come into your firm. So it's not just about competing for leadership in a market. It's also competing for skills. Yeah. It's competing for all kinds of other things. And in some cases, you are even competing for the backing of banks or venture capitalists.
Yeah. And that observation obviously also is an interesting bit of observation when you look at those people who are so uncomfortable with competition, because if you would ask them, so imagine that you have a cousin who is working in a company that is a really horrible place to work, that is deeply unethical, that is constantly involved in playing dirty games, and there is another company that is competing for your cousin's service and is trying to attract it. So should your cousin go for that, to switch to that other company, or be loyal and stick with the temporary, with the current employer? And quite likely everybody would say, well, of course that cousin should change job, right?
Yes.
But that would then be okay. So the consequence is, you say your cousin should relent to the competitive opportunities that are there.
And if one take this argument further, then even NGOs and not-for-profits and religious organizations in its own ways all are competing for scarce resources.
Obviously, yeah.
So, you know, if one look at it, then competition is everywhere in the society, from an individual performance to a organizational performance to organizations competing against organizations. Yeah. And then society is also competing to a certain degree.
Yeah.
Let's look at some of the sticks of competition. So if you don't compete, then it's obviously more difficult for you to attract good staff. Or if you are not competitive as a person in your performance, then you would not be able to find a job or customers. Or maybe not get funding to expand your business.
Mm.
And if your sports team is not competitive, then you will struggle to get sponsors and to get all kinds of contracts and even, again, to get talent.
Yeah.
So there's also a lot of sticks. If you are not competitive in your activities, then you will actually not get your allocation of scarce resources.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, and exactly the same obviously applies not only to companies but also to localities, be it within a country or be it between countries.
Yeah, I want to just quickly comment on something that you said just now in passing. It's important to maybe just recognize that not all firms are competing to be the leader in their sector or in their market. Some firms have to compete to be in the second place and in the third place, or to be the convenient alternative to the market leader. So there's very different read, but wherever you position yourself in the market, you have to compete. So even if you're a local pizza shop in a residential neighborhood, you still have to compete against a shopping center that's close by, because some families would want to go there and others would want to come to you. So, you don't have to be the leading pizza shop in the whole world. You could just be a little neighborhood shop or a little neighborhood business. And if you are not competitive, then you will not survive.
Mm. Yeah. A pizza shop also, again, is an interesting case, because it helps to understand, again, why many people are uncomfortable with competition. What you often see, and what I've often seen, is that businesses like pizza shops, for instance, are competing primarily on price. And then you typically get a war going on where everybody is underbidding everybody else. And ultimately, as a consumer, you benefit because the pizzas get ever cheaper. But then you start to notice that they also get worse and the ingredients get crappier. And ultimately, everybody is worse off, really. And the obvious solution is that, In markets that work pretty well, you have a different type of competition that is much more based on innovation, on ideas, on creativity. So some shops come up with different pizzas, with different styles of pizzas, with different compositions of pizzas, and distinguish themselves in that way. So rather than having to enter into this underbidding, this price war approach, they can differentiate themselves in a different way and achieve a much better price, get a much better price for their product.
And sometimes it isn't just about your core product, but it's also about your setting, you know, what kind of furniture you have in your shop. And, you know, it goes beyond just the product and the price. I think that's very important to say that, you know, a pizza shop is also not just competing against other pizza shops. It's also competing against a burger establishment and, you know, a vegetable bar. Whatever.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so...
So, should we move to localities now?
Let's look at localities. So, Jörg, people don't always like the idea that places are competing.
And for obvious reasons, because they tend to think, which is not necessarily true, that it's a zero-sum game, that the improved quality of life in one locality or the improved income in one locality is the decrease of income in a different locality.
Well, I think what you've just said can be applied to all competition, because I sometimes get the feeling that people don't like very competitive firms because they pay such high salaries and their CEOs earn so much money. And a lot of people think that if one person is earning 10 million, then it means there must be several thousand people that is then earning nothing.
Mm.
So, okay, so maybe that argument goes far beyond locations.
Yeah, it sure does.
Okay, but you've made the statement then that some people think that if one place is competitive, then other places would suffer.
Yeah.
And maybe you're right. Maybe they will suffer until they can come up with some or other offering that is valued by somebody, that is not valued in social value, but is valued in economical terms.
Mm. Yeah. For instance, one of the discussions that we've often seen is about local economic development as an exercise in smokestack chasing.
Yes.
Which is an approach to LED where you're throwing money at companies in order to attract their investment to your locality, where local governments are subsidizing companies to attract them as investors to their locality. And if that is the only attraction that you have to offer, then probably you will have to offer quite a lot of money to a company to attract it. And that then obviously is something that an external observer would find very, very odd, because you shouldn't just throw taxpayer money at a private business.
And I think that when we go to, I mean, the kind of places where we often work, we find that there are companies, even in places where people say there's no businesses here, we find businesses.
Yeah.
And what we generally find is that they are not orientated to competition, but maybe that is also because they are sometimes very comfortable where they are.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so I'm thinking of some of the smaller retailers that you find in South Africa in the informal townships. They're not very rich, but compared to all the businesses around them, they are making a killing in terms of profit and a positive cash flow. But they are very often not competitive. Their prices aren't very competitive. Their total offering in terms of the venue is not competitive. And while a lot of people say, yes, but we shouldn't put pressure on these small retails now to become competitive, it's actually the consumers that suffer, especially when there's a cartel-like behavior or
monopoly.
Collusion or a monopoly between different retailers. And, it's always the consumers that suffer. It's not the business people that suffer.
Yeah.
Okay, so how can a place that is not very competitive then compete? What's their chance in the world?
Well, I think the easiest way to look at that issue is to look at it from a tourism development perspective, because in tourism it's so obvious that a couple of different localities are basically competing for the same customer base, the same tourists that are looking at ways to spend a weekend or to spend their vacation. And then there's the question, okay, so what do you have to offer? Some of the places have all sorts of natural advantages, such as beautiful landscape or beautiful beaches or something like that. Other places come up with attractions and basically invent attractions and create competitiveness out of nothing or out of very, very small natural attractions that are there. And that then basically tells you what to do. What you have to try is to come up with some kind of attraction, some kind of advantage, some kind of attractor to your place that distinguishes your location from other localities and that makes people come to your place rather than going somewhere else.
And what you mean with making your place distinguishable from another place doesn't mean that if everybody else is into building waterfronts or nature reserves around waterfalls that you can't do that. It just means that if you decide to also do a nature reserve and a waterfall development, that you have to offer it in a different way than other places, either through even better value or maybe through a bicycle trail or maybe through better pricing or, you know, maybe
or
through
the better overall package that attracts that appeals to the whole family and not just one or two of the family members.
So you know, we don't say, well, you have to then come up with something that nobody else has thought about. It's about just remembering that if you're competing in that specific market, the market for waterfalls and nature reserves, that you have to at least be as good as the average or better if you want to, live, sustain this operation in the long term.
Exactly. I mean, ideally, of course, you would come up with a couple of unique things.
Yes, of course.
But that may be really difficult. And on the other hand, we often see that places try to do something, but then everything that they do has been done before and has been done better somewhere else.
And that's very sad.
And it's sad, and it's going to be a bit disappointing.
Yes, and it's always sad for the communities that are involved in this. You know, I actually don't think tourism is such a good example, because I think it is so difficult, because in tourism we always mismanage local stakeholders' expectations always go up.
Yeah.
But let's just look at some of the other areas of competition. I mean, in sectors, manufacturing sectors.
Yeah.
It's not just about getting the individual firms in your location to compete against each other. It's also getting them as a collective to compete better against other collectives, against other spaces.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at your country, South Africa, it's one of those countries with an extreme spatial imbalance, where economic activity is basically mostly attracted to one large area around Johannesburg, and then to a lesser extent around Durban and Cape Town. And that has a lot to do with the competitiveness of those localities in terms of the various qualities that they have to offer to businesses, in terms of availability of suppliers, availability of customers, availability of all sorts of specialized services, and so on. So that makes it really tricky for other places to attract business or to retain business. But it also defines the rules of the game for other localities. So if other places, if other regions in the country want to develop a stronger business base or want to retain existing businesses, the quality criteria are defined by those leading spots.
And actually, to come to that point, technology very often plays a role in giving other places and other sectors a chance. So, you know, if you just look at the internet, allows us to record this show, and it actually doesn't matter where we are. I remember one show, you were sitting in a hotel in Sri Lanka and I was sitting somewhere else in South Africa.
Yeah.
And so technology very often changes the rules of the games and it allows different places to try different things or different sectors to come back into the game operating at the cutting edge.
Yeah. Well, I think the important point there is that the rules of the game are not cast in stone. They're changing over time.
The whole time. You're right. And, you know, I think, again, we have to come back to this thing of saying it isn't a zero-sum game. So if three metropolitan areas in South Africa are advancing, they're not doing that at the cost of the other regions.
Not necessarily, no.
No, yes, not necessarily. So, you know, I would imagine that all the periphery areas around the metropolitan areas in South Africa would create a massive new variety of opportunities that are actually all feasible because of the dynamics taking place in the metropolitan.
Mm. At the same time, I think it's important to understand that those metropolises in South Africa, even though they are thriving in the South African and the Southern African context, they are also competing at a global level. So they are competing for leading service companies, extremely specialized high-performance service providers that are carefully picking their localities in all sorts of places all over the world and may or may not decide to go to Durban or Cape Town or Johannesburg. And their presence or their absence will make a significant difference for other companies in those localities. So if you have or don't have extremely specialized, say, advertisement agencies or highly specialized design companies in your locality, or if you don't have them there, that will definitely affect your competitiveness and the ability of other companies to compete in a globalized market.
Okay. So maybe just as we head towards the end of this show, to say that not all competition is good.
Mm-hmm.
So when nations compete over scarce resources,
which is unavoidable.
Yes, okay, but when they start fighting over it and they launch wars, we don't like this kind of competition.
That's right, yeah.
And then we also don't like the kind of competition where price wars are started and it's a race to the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Right. And one of the reasons why we don't like that is because we tend to find that it's not really necessary. It's typically a measure of desperation that reflects a lack of creativity and innovativeness.
Yes. So we don't like competition purely on price. That would be the other way to say it.
Yeah.
I think we both like competition that is based more on innovation.
I mean, we don't mind that prices go down, but this kind of price war that where prices collapse completely, like in my pizza example earlier, then just everybody gets hurt, and that is something that we don't like.
Well, and I think if one look at the entry price of vehicles in South Africa as an example, over the last 10 years, the price of entry vehicles have been steadily rising, but not at the rate of inflation, at a much higher rate. So when I bought my first car just over 10 years ago, I paid just over €3,500 for that car.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't buy a new car at that price until a few months ago, and I think it was Tata that started with this new entry-level vehicle.
Yeah.
And it changed the dynamics. So, you know, we like it when prices come down, but Tata's new entry at this bottom market is not going to steal sales away from many other of the producers. But it changes the dynamics in that specific market at the entry-level market.
Yeah. It basically changes the rules of the game for the taxi businesses.
Okay, so a closing remark from your side.
Well, we started with the observation that many people are uncomfortable with the concept of competition and competitiveness and being competitive. I hope we have been able to explain that being competitive doesn't necessarily mean that everybody is aggressively using their elbows all the time, but that being competitive is something that you just want to be in order to make it in a very competitive world and in a globalized world.
Okay, and I think as development practitioners, we have to really work at trying to increase competitiveness at a local level. So that means the competitiveness of individuals, and with that, again, I don't mean using baseball bats on other people's kneecaps, but in terms of people being able to present their ideas better,
or
allowing opposing views to be aired and to be discussed. Yeah. We want to see firms being more competitive. We want to see new entrants coming in to be competitive because, you know, just adding more retailers without anybody adding any new innovation or any new features will eventually lead to a race to the bottom where people only compete on price. Yeah. And then we want to, at a higher level, we want to see cities, towns, townships, regions, and countries competing and being competitive. So we don't necessarily with that mean that they have to be first, but we want them to be competitive, to be in the game.
Yeah, and to improve all the time.
Okay, well, I think that we've covered this topic now from different angles. And maybe in the next show, we should look at a related topic, and that would be productivity.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.